Good morning. This is Les Harms, speaking on behalf of the Adams County Historical Society, welcoming you to another segment of Adams County History. Prohibition is almost a forgotten term for many Americans, especially in Adams County, Nebraska. It began with the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which banned the manufacture and transportation and sale of intoxicating liquor and went into effect with the Volstead Act. It was very difficult to enforce, and this morning we're going to tell about some of the effects on Adams County. The utopia that was supposed to result when prohibition was law somehow just didn't occur, not in Adams County nor in any other part of the country. The drunks were still with us. And what was even worse, there were more of them as a result of prohibition. The old saw about forbidden fruit being the sweetest proved to be true for so many Americans. All right. Many people who had only used wine and beer in the pre-18th Amendment days now were consuming distilled spirits as well. And so long as they had to break the law for fermented drink, they might as well break it for the spirits. The drinking of hard liquor, the activity formerly that was reserved for males, now become an activity also for all sexes and classes of the population. It was fashionable. And through the 19th Amendment, women had won the right to vote. And they sought equality in other fields as well. Well, the situation in Adams County was not unique. It was merely a reflection of a national trend. Those that broke the law, the 18th Amendment prohibited that, and they presented a broad spectrum of Adams County residents. We were talking about doctors, lawyers, judges, businessmen, farmers, employers, employees. At first, they broke the law warily, but later they kind of scoffed at it. It became a game. Although there are no statistics to prove the case, it's generally assumed that a larger percentage of the population consumed liquor at the end of the noble experiment, as it came to be called, than before it was enacted. For some men and some women alike, a flask of liquor as part of one's dress-up wardrobe. Many of those early customers that were bootleggers in Adams County were veterans of World War I who had been exposed to other cultures and the prairie Puritanism. It did not take long for others in the community to follow. Perhaps the tensions and the pressure of the 20th century have been a part of this. It's impossible to say. Those who did not drink then do not now, and legality really has nothing to do with that decision. The people of Adams County have been, for the most part, God-fearing, church-going Christians, and many of the denominations insisted that the consumption of any alcoholic beverages was a sin, especially back then. Drinking was a moral issue, not a legal one. But because the large segments of the population were willing to pay for illegal goods, a great thriving business sprang up. There was money in booze, and so we had bootlegging. Of the last years of prohibition, in the 1930s, one former resident interviewed said, that came after many years of thinking, when he said, quote, "It was often said whiskey could be purchased at any restaurant in Hastings, with the exception of the YWCA. This sweeping generalization was not quite true, but almost. As I did more research, there were several other so-called restaurants around town that you couldn't buy a sandwich in any of them," he continued. "Most of their business was carried on in the back room. A legend, undocumented, has it that during the 18 years that prohibition existed in Hastings, one of the mayors had made an arrangement with a leading bootlegger that he would provide the necessary protection and grant the sole liquor rights in return for the payment of $1 a gallon of the liquor." Another person made this comment. One Saturday night, a group of us were having a party at the home of one of the couples, but we had no liquor. Most of us didn't have any money to buy it anyway. The old-timer said one of the group was a police officer, so four of us got into a car. We drove downtown. We stopped at eight different so-called restaurants. The officer was the only one to go in, and he came out with a pint of whiskey from each one at no cost to us. There were raids, nevertheless. Sometimes the La Camino would be raided, a nice spot on 2nd Street, just west of Laird Avenue. And also there was a Cosmopolitan Club on the Baltimore, north of 18th Street, and others. Presumably, they were buying their supplies from non-protected merchants. Out in the country, avoiding the law brought out imaginative effort, and some of the methods were ingenious. For example, one bootlegger would use culverts, metal culverts, for his delivery. If a customer wanted liquor, he put an order with his friendly liquor dealer and paid him, and then learned which culvert under which gravel road to look into for his quart or his gallon of booze would be resting there. Other bootleggers used all kinds of locations, maybe a chicken house, maybe some type of a cupboard, maybe a closet in a semi-public lodging, and many, many others. To avoid the situation or the attention of federal liquor men who noticed the large-scale sales of sugar, particularly during the non-canning season, bootleggers sometimes would watch the grocery stores and see which customers were buying large amounts of sugar. Booze making required large amounts, and so those people who would buy 100-pound sacks of sugar were an easy means for a law enforcement officer to find out who was manufacturing it. A group of attentive young males one time noticed a neighbor buying a quantity of sugar and a can of malt at a country store and made note of the date. When they figured the brewing time was up, they watched his house diligently. When he went to town, they took over the bottle of liquor. So it was a common type of thing. Although certainly not all farmers were liquor manufacturers, many of them would protect who they were. One prominent distiller sometimes hauled into court for his manufacturing activities, got word one day that the sheriff and his men were on their way to his farm. He happened to be in town, and the law had a head start on him. He telephoned his neighbors, then got in his buggy and whipped the horses to get home as fast as possible. But the law had beat him there, and they found nothing. The neighbors had got there first, had loaded up the bottled goods, and put them in the livestock tank out of sight of prying eyes. In fact, many farms, the stock tank was the favorite place for storing bottled goods. You had to get the lid on tight, though, because you didn't want your horse or cattle to become inebriated. Well, not all liquor was consumed in Adams County was homemade. There were some that were sometimes downright dangerous, and those that were made of rye, sometimes contained ergot, which was made of the corn, contained fuel, and sometimes it was filtered, sometimes it wasn't filtered. And some of the liquor was commercially made. It was imported from Canada, supplied by rum runners. But the volume of business in non-South Central Nebraska was not large enough to attract a syndicate or an organization with well-defined routes or illegal activities. Prohibition ended in Hastings in 1935. The noble experiment had been a failure, for in the long run, it really had created more problems than it had solved. This moment in time has been a presentation of the Adams County Historical Society. We welcome you to listen, learn. Please consider joining our society. We want to preserve the history of our county. You can also visit our website at AdamsHistory.org. And so, this is Les Harms, once again, inviting you in to tune in on the 2nd and the 4th Friday of each month. Thank you for listening.